This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 54, She Blinded Me with Science. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday afternoon. I won't tell you which Friday afternoon it is, but it might be Friday morning, and it could be Friday night, depending on which time you think we're recording it at. But it all doesn't matter, because it's when you listen at your convenience. Welcome to another exciting episode of GamesAtWork.biz with my wonderful, wonderful, fantastic co-hosts who have been covering the whole show for some time since I've been off goofing off. Phaedra Boynodiris.
Good morning, folks. Boy, how many coffees have you drunk today, Michael?
I've only had one, and it only had two shots of espresso in it.
Oh, that's nothing. Out.
That's nothing for me, man.
By the way, that's Wonder Phaedra to you.
That's
Wonder.
Right.
As of the last show.
Yes, I saw the wonderful little icon mini figs. That's pretty cool. I like the little jet thingy.
Yes.
The jet thingy. Michael, welcome to the show.
And of course, yes, I'm happy to be welcomed to the show here too.
It's the show that you've been on more than I have lately.
Well, there's that as well. It's been a lovely hot day here in Budapest, and it's getting hotter by the moment. And this weekend, it should be a whopping somewhere close to 40.
Whoa, that's miserable hot.
Get out. Yeah, so that's Celsius for you non-converting kind of people.
Or centigrade. Isn't it centigrade is the other way of saying that?
Yeah, you could say that too.
Okay.
So it's going to be hot. Hot.
So, Phaedra, you've been off having a fun time talking to a bunch of healthy people.
I did. There was the Southeast Smarter Healthcare and Life Sciences Summit down here in lovely Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, yesterday. And we had all kinds of mavens there talking about Watson and next-generation customer care and healthcare and what all the big problems were. And I've got to tell you, we had just a wonderful discussion about the next generation of games for health. Some really, really cool discussions. I really enjoyed it.
So there were a lot of gaming and health mavens there.
What
were some of the key areas? I mean, you talked about Watson, right? But
there was an interesting discussion about the snapshot of games for health today. So all these great examples of user behavior modification games. There were some people there who had actually worked on Remission 2. There was a discussion about games used for post-traumatic stress disorder with the Wounded Warrior Project. It was really, really interesting. And then we talked about the size of the problem, like what's the size of the market with regards to games for health. And if you just took a look at, for example, diabetes, right, we've got a laundry list of companies here and organizations and what their annual cost is for dealing with subscribers who have diabetes, who are afflicted with it. Humana alone forks out $4 billion annually. And so if 80% of those cases are reversible, according to science, then why wouldn't you invest in motivational user change, right? And because of the kinds of research and statistics that have come out of these games, there was a really healthy discussion about what it takes to really be able to evolve the space and get more organizations to invest.
You know, that's funny, Phaedra. Isn't it very similar to what we were talking about sort of off mic, off air last week in terms of how do you get people to adhere better to their drug regimen that will help to prevent, reverse, control disease?
Electric shock therapy.
Well, it was
– if you don't take your pills
– there was a good, healthy discussion about examples out in the marketplace that are focused on patients. But on the flip side, there was also a discussion about, you know, what about the caregivers themselves? Is there an opportunity, kind of like what we were discussing that came out of the gamification summit, the work that Synergy did for sales, for the Verizon sales folks, mm-hmm. and how, you know, they were profiled and then they were given little micro quests fed to them based on what was happening on the store floor. Could something like that happen with healthcare practitioners? Like, given what you know about the healthcare practitioner and which patient you're actually working with, is there a way to somehow guide or modify their user behavior to optimize it without it being totally disruptive to the session?
Well, it's, so it's interesting about, gosh, almost 20 years ago. I can't believe I can say that publicly now. I designed and developed a system for home health care nurses that we drove behavior of the nurse and the patient at the patient's home based off of what we called variance processing. So there were the expected outcomes for each visit and for each patient activity of each visit. And then when those outcomes were not met, we would refactor the treatment plan with the nurse to change behavior on both sides. It would have been really cool to add a true gaming aspect to that. But, you know, you now have these devices. We were a little bit ahead of our time back then, but you have devices that are actually carried by the caregiver into all interactions with the patient.
iPads.
And yeah, we were actually, it's funny, we were actually using at the time a tablet device that was running Pen for Windows, or Windows Pen, whatever it was called at the time. So you had a tablet with a little pen and you wrote on the screen and we could capture information. And we actually dynamically changed the treatment plan based off of results. Very, very, very cool.
So,
now,
you know,
gaming that would just have been awesome, right? You know, this time you've got a patient with diabetes and a broken hip, and on the third visit they should be able to do X, and they can't do X. So how do you game it so that they will more actively engage in their treatment? So on the fourth visit they can do X plus Y to get to the point where they need to be.
Right. And I think the way you're describing it, Michael, this work you did 20 years ago, you were really looking to align the interest of the caregiver with the interest of the patient.
Absolutely.
To optimize their outcome, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So it, playing our favorite little, you know, where's the game in it? That would be there's actually two games in there with a combined better outcome, right? You want to optimize the behavior of the caregiver, and you want to optimize the behavior of the patient so that you realize the best possible outcome of the situation.
So you know, we use that term in business a lot, optimize, right? If you're a patient, would you want your caregiver to say, hey, we're going to optimize your treatment today? So,
well, sure,
those
sure. I want to increase my range of motion, right? If my range of motion is limited, I want to be able to do that.
Not just that, but here's an example that was brought up yesterday. So, you know, the doctor has a typical average of about 7 minutes with the patient. So they're sitting down with them. Okay, how are you doing? Based on what questions the doctor is asking the patient, they're starting to get info. But if they neglect to ask certain questions like, so what's going on in your life right now? Or how are you sleeping? Or, you know, these kinds of things to assess, you know, their mental health. Are they going through some major milestone, you know what I mean, in their lives? They might, you know, as the patient is walking out the door, say something like, oh, I forgot to tell you, I haven't slept in 2 weeks and I've had incredible back pain. You know, I came in for a checkup, or I came in because of this cold, but I've got all these other problems. So how is it that you get the practitioner to ask the right questions up front, you know, and have that be kind of like a game or some sort of an how do you change that behavior?
So I've got the perfect idea, Fader, just as you're describing this. So if you think about all the big data around semantic analysis, right? So you could actually listen into that kind of conversation as we're getting more to wearable computers and more and more microphones in various places. You could actually be listening to that conversation and have the big data environment say, hey, you know what you're missing? Gosh, you know, similar patients have these kind of things. This patient seems like they're not telling you the whole story. The doctor is missing a question to ask, and the system could actually prompt them, you know, because that the patient is maybe getting frustrated or agitated. It could be a variety of things that the system could pick up on and prompt the practitioner, the caregiver, to steer the conversation to really what might be bothering them.
Yeah, game your doctor's bedside manner.
Yeah.
How do you do that subtly without interrupting?
Well, just think about Google it. There's rumors that the next version of Google, right, and some of the next version of Android plus, you know, Google Now plus, Samsung Voice or something. These are all things that, in theory, have always on microphones on your cell phone.
Yes.
Just listening to the conversation Google, you know, OK Glass or OK Samsung, right?
OK, so another point of discussion was, you know, that here in the Research Triangle Park area, Wake County in particular, is actually number two in the country as it pertains to games, game design and development. And certainly there's a tremendous investment here in serious games. We've got ARA, we've got Therasim as it pertains to Games for Health. And so these guys have been investing a lot in clinical learning labs. So imagine if you've got, you know, it's a very first person gaming engine where you've got an avatar has been pre-programmed with a certain set of criteria associated with a patient, right? Here's the blood pressure this guy has, the XYZ diseases, et cetera. And so, you know, this has been quite popular for some time. And so the evolution of this space of clinical learning labs is, wouldn't it be neater and much more useful if you could actually have these clinical learning labs or these avatars integrated directly into patients' electronic healthcare records? So let's say, you know, Michael, you're about to go in for surgery. Let me go in and upload all the info regarding your electronic healthcare record to this avatar, so I may be able to practice beforehand and see, okay, you know, what kinds of different approaches might work better than others, given what we know about this patient.
Also, flight sim for the doctor before they start cutting skin.
Well,
it's kind of cool if you think about it. There's as part of the there was a TED talk about, you know, how we're going to live forever, right? You remember that one? And he's talking about uploading of the brain and uploading of various things. If you could upload all your information, not only just your medical record, but your social network information, your genetic information, then you could tease out some of the non-obvious behaviors or activities that might be impacting your health. Or, for example, it could actually reflect, let's say you have a slight allergy to certain types of grasses. That impacts your recovery as it relates to an anesthesia. And last week, right before you're supposed to go in for this procedure, you spent a week solid camping out in an area that is known for these grasses. That is information that's pertinent to the procedure about to be performed that you may not talk about. Because, hey, you were just camping. You didn't necessarily know. Yeah, your allergies were acting up a little bit, but you didn't know that's because you're sitting in the middle of a field with this stuff. Right?
That makes perfect sense. Yes.
Yeah. The key thing there is it's more than just the medical information that might have an impact on the procedure, but the larger scope of social information and other data feeds that are currently readily available. And that's a big data thing. The point is, also, in the U.S., we are still in the process of moving a lot of the medical stuff over to digital records, right? It's not fully implemented at all levels of the healthcare system.
Not by a long shot, and won't be.
Law. It's required by law to be ready, I think, 2014 or 2015. So, and it's only been required by law and moved to the right since I was in healthcare 20 years ago.
Yeah, so just wait for the exception management, you know, the small practitioners, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is a huge undertaking, and extremely well-funded enterprises have jumped on this and not done as well as one might have hoped. WebMD is a great example of that, right?
Yep.
You know,
it's because there's a lot of system integration that is required to pull something like this off. But I mean, obviously, I don't know how many times the word holistic approach to medicine or the words were said yesterday, but it's on everybody's radar.
Yep.
You know, the other thing that I would chime in on this with the whole live forever piece, and there's so much literature, science fiction albeit, but so much literature that imagines what life would be like by saving copies of people, forking copies of people living forever. You know, we're talking about the physical manifestations here. What might be interesting, too, to consider is mental health implications and games for mental health.
Oh, man, you talk about simulation there, right? And also the work that's going on with genetically specific or targeted medication, right? So you could actually, let's go completely future, right? You build a digital replica, an avatar, a cloned avatar, and you now take and apply different genetically targeted DNA-based medicines to them to see the implications of how that plays out, those forked futures, so that you know which
to the avatar in a virtual lab, a simulated set of medicine.
Yeah,
right?
And speaking of that, we found a link a little while back we haven't had a chance to talk to, but I think it kind of fits really well into this part of the discussion. There's a application for the iPad called Labster that we'll have a link in that actually allows you to learn and play with lots of different lab equipment, blow things up in the lab, learn about, you know, animal genetics, enzyme kinetics, and, you know, CSI type activities all on your iPad and playing with those what if scenarios in the medical industry.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, while I haven't tried it directly, you know, being able to do chromatography, DNA sequencing, all kinds of cool stuff. I did get a chance to play eons ago with CatLab doing some very basic genetic analysis using various traits in the feline species. So you could say, well, you know, how do you get a calico kitten? You know, what are the kinds of cats you need to combine? And then what's the percentage chance of actually landing a calico cat versus a white one or one with white socks or white black or? Did you ever play with something like that eons ago?
Well, eons ago, you know, just the, Mendel P experiments, right? And doing genetic
marigolds and stuff like that. I mean, those are the easy ones, right?
Yeah, but I mean, literally, there are these grids that you do. You'd say, you know, if I have a pea pod with these characteristics and another pea pod with those characteristics, and I cross-did them, what would be the various percentage likelihood of new pea pods that were these characteristics, those characteristics, the dominant recessive genes, and all that other fun stuff?
Yes. So theoretically, with enough DNA sequencing analysis, you could do some really interesting kind of models along those lines to say, here's some traits that I want to go after. If we understand enough of the DNA sequencing, what would be the likelihood of achieving what it is that you're looking to do? Well, then we all go down the GMO route, and kind of that's an interesting other topic to consider too.
Well, the interesting
Labster.
Go ahead, Pedro.
I was going to say Labster is very cool. I was just reading up on how has it been funded. It looks like it's the Danish Ministry of Science is one of the two big funders.
Science!
They've got the Technical University of Denmark, Novo Nordisk. They've got all kinds of subject matter experts that have formed a coalition, in essence, to create this. Very cool.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to playing the CSI example, though. That'll be fun.
Yeah. This is neat.
Neat.
Very cool. Well, I know this is another blast through science and health quick show, but I did have one thing I wanted to talk about. Are you guys familiar with the website and app in Lumosity?
I am familiar with it, yes.
I'm familiar, but not nearly as much as you, Michael.
Yeah, I I had heard about this, gosh, it's a couple of years now. And you know, one of the other podcasts I listen to, one of the hosts there talks about all the time he's been training his brain and doesn't want to get old. He's been playing Luminosity and he did all this stuff. And it really has to do with a couple of different ways of improving, memory, attention, mental flexibility, et cetera. And it's a series of games that are supposed to take, you know, no more than an hour a day to help improve brain elasticity, right? So you don't fragment and get old. How's that? And when
games that do that kind of thing too. I mean, there were ones on the Nintendo DS, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah. So I signed up for an account. I didn't do the paid one, but this had all the hallmarks of a freemium model, or as we've been using over a while, a paymium model, in the sense that there's 6 or 8 games for each type of brain function that you're trying to work on in Lumosity, and they only give you 2 or 3 in the free trial period. After that, they nag the crap out of you to upgrade. And I did this for about a month, and to be honest, I noticed nothing. As a matter of fact, while some of the scoring seemed to improve, most of it went down. So the first time I played it, the brain was doing much better than the last time I played it. And I don't know if that's just a statement of everything going on in my life, or if it was actually making me dumber.
Maybe you were not controlling all the variables.
But it's possible. I mean, if you had a very stressful month, you had a lot of other things going on in your life at that point in time. I mean, maybe it's the other environmental factors.
Or your diet, or, you know, allergies, perhaps. You know,
yeah, medicine. I was out in the field. I was camping. There's an old Steve Martin routine that I'll let you look up about, let's go camping. And that's the only reference I'm going to make.
Probably a good one.
Probably a good one, because this was back in let's get small days.
Do you remember the Brain Age games from Nintendo DS?
Yep.
They too had been pushing for years and years about this this idea of human cognition being able to be raised through games. That was their major selling point.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, I remember that pretty strong, and I think it's a lot of the same types of exercises.
I don't.
So.
Yeah, even the logo looks a little similar when you take a look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think, from a business model perspective, Lumosity is going up against Nintendo DS? I wonder what they're doing different from Nintendo DS. Maybe they're thinking, well, the audience that we're trying to attract won't have the Nintendo DS's as a platform, and we want to do it via PC or something.
They released about a month ago. They released an iPad app, an iPhone app version of it. Mm-hmm. It's prior to that, it's all been kind of web based. I think the more interesting part is they're going at it from a kind of more mature, formal, business centric, you know. What's the right word I'm looking for? I want to say old person mode.
Old person mode.
Your brain is shriveling up and dying. Come play our game. But they're doing it not as a game, right? So Brain Age was really a game that said it gave you these benefits. This is a site about, you know, the science of improving brain flexibility and performance, and we have these training things that are games or exercises, as they call it. So it's coming at the same space, but from a, like I said, a more an adult version versus a kid's version, if that's the right way to put it.
But if that's the case, you know, how many adults are actually going out buying a Nintendo DS for this game?
Yeah, for Brain Age, I don't know.
Question.
I mean, think about it. This is a unitasker device. Well, not a unitasker. I mean, it's a game device, right? So, how many adults? Maybe they're taking it from their children, buying this for their children for their improvement, and then they play it themselves. Maybe.
Could be. I don't know. Well, I know we're just about out of time. Michael, you had one thing you wanted to get in.
Well, yes, it's actually related to the story that we're just talking about. So this, there is a game called Anki, right, that I've just plopped into the chat here, too. And I was asking one of our friends and listeners, our buddy Rich from Chapel Hill, about what does he use to train his brain for Japanese? You know, as you guys know, I'm learning my Hungarian, and Hungarian is not terribly easy. Japanese is certainly not easy. And flashcards are a great way to help you build your memory and understanding of a language. And so he replied extremely quickly that this game Anki is quite good. And one of the ways that it works is it builds you can build a virtual flashcard deck in this tool, and then those flashcards are presented to you in an order depending upon your own knowledge and recollection. So if you get the answer, right, if they show, if the flashcard for one shows up and it's edge, and I know that, it will put that into a frequency that is much more infrequent than the ones that I don't remember so much, like Nedge or Ut or any one of the other things.
Well, it's interesting. I seem to remember, and I don't know if it was last week's show or if it was in another discussion elsewhere, about the game of there was a translation, open source translation crowdsourcing. Did you guys talk about that last week?
Open source translation crowdsourcing? Translation?
Crowdsourcing. This must be from a while ago, Michael.
Yeah, but but very recently this has come up again, and I was like, I know about that. We've been talking about that in other domains about how certain crowdsourcing tools for translation, maybe it was on NPR. It was talked about, and it's like, it was NPR, you guys probably are so far behind. and it was one of the crowdsourcing suppliers that was tying it into a game to do language translation. And how this actually, looking at the Anki site and some of the things that they talk about, it looks like it's doing a lot of the same things where, you know, you're almost gaming translation for business by improving your language skills.
Well, there is that, but you know what I didn't realize until I actually looked at the site a little bit more is it's more than just language development. It has other things too. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I could do a much better job of remembering people face names. That's one of the things I really struggle with. I didn't realize that this would allow for a better job of that. So can you imagine the visual, you know, memorization that can be helpful here?
All you need is Google Glass, though. Why'd you get it? Why do you have
to
remember
anything? You don't even
need that.
You just need one word. There's one word. It works for everything. Dude. Hey, dude, how's it going? Dude. I haven't seen you in a while. Dude. Oh my God. Dude.
Actually, as our friends Trey and I can't remember his name. Dude.
Dude.
You can have a whole conversation with only using the word dude.
Right.
Dude.
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 See? Okay, let's wrap.
Well, it's been great being back on the show, guys.
It's been dude-olving.
It's been great to be back on the show. Thanks for
we're happy
keeping
to have
forward.
You back. We're glad you're back safe and sound.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I just want to remind our listeners, we do value and appreciate your feedback. So if you get a chance over on iTunes, if you follow us that way, give us a rating and maybe a review. We'd like to hear from you. Or follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz for the overall account. Or Michael, you're at Carolina Big Blue. And Phaedra, you're at Innovate Game with a 8, the number 8. I'm at Michael Rose 01. We're also at Games at Work on Tumblr. Games@work_biz on Facebook, and we have a Games at Work community on Google+, as well as a Google+ page. And as always, you can find
everything
about us.
You can't swing a dead cat without hitting us
at our website at gamesatwork.biz. Thanks, everybody.
Not that we advocate swinging cats or anything.
No,
right?
No, we like cats. Cats are nice.
Yes. Okay, guys, we'll talk
to
you later.
All right, everyone. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.